Windows down, music up. Get ready to hit the road in a new Chevy SUV or truck. Chevy is a name you know and trust. It's Chevy as American as apple pie and baseball. Check out the full line of Chevy vehicles at your local Chevy dealer. Chevy, drive Chicago.
All right, so about a day or so ago, WTTW, the corporate face of news in Chicago, which means everything runs through the corporate sieve and all the news gets taken out, and what you get is nonsense, corporate nonsense. They're saying that Larry Snelling, the Chicago Police Department superintendent, is to retire this month. Nothing we haven't seen or heard. But you know what is not being discussed? What's not being discussed is, what is that going to do to the city? At the height of the youth, what do they call those? The youth street takeovers, which means, let's just put it in simple terms, they're taking over the streets. They're committing violence in the streets. And where are the police? Where are the police? Where's the police leadership? I don't know. And to find out, we're going to have Gene Roy, my friend and former chief of detectives, Chicago Police Department, here with us on the Chicago Way podcast, joining Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, and me, John Cass of johncassnews.com. Jeff and I have been talking about this for a while now. Where is the discussion about Snelling and the political fallout? We're not seeing it. We're not seeing any of that. And where are you as the anarchy levels increase, as Dorothy Tillman gets her way in the anarchy business, as the people of Chicago are torn apart and don't know where to go, as the politics of the city of Chicago work hard against them to prevent them from getting good leadership in the police department? You're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way. Absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
To understand what's going on here, think of all the police officers in Chicago dealing with the situation of chaos and the political establishment fomenting the chaos and anarchy as we speak. And there was a piece by ABC7. The other day that expresses a lot of this.
Morning, guys. We have now confirmed this is a deadly shooting. Just take a look at the scene behind me here on Grandin State. We've counted at least 78 evidence markers marking the amount of shell casings that police are looking at right now. Now, we were told from police that a 30-year-old man and a 65-year-old man were outside when they heard gunshots and felt pain. Both were told were rushed to the hospital. Police say the 30-year-old was shot multiple times. We're told he did not make it. And the 65-year-old man was shot in the foot and was last listed in fair condition. But you can see, police are still investigating this and trying to figure out what led up to this shooting. And of course, we'll bring you more updates on this breaking news as we learn more.
I want you to think about this. The forces of anarchy are growing in Chicago. I think of all the people that heard that story, like me and Betty. She doesn't want to go down there to that corner. I don't blame her. I don't think anyone does. But what happens to a city when that happens? You're not only talking about loss of money, you're talking about revenue. You're talking about the city losing its way. No one wants to get to it. It's like becoming a cartoon or cliche. You don't have to hear me complain about it. You can hear from Gene Roy, the former chief of detectives, the Chicago Police Department, on this anarchy that's being fomented throughout the city, not only in the near north, everywhere. Gene, welcome to the Chicago Way.
Pleasure to be here with you, John.
Chief, always good to catch up with you. I am in awe of what I see on the news these days. And I think you hit it on the head because we pulled that clip from something you retweeted and referenced. And this was end of June going into July 1st. And you nailed it on the head there. There were over 100 shots fired, at least. That's just what they recovered on the scene. And this wasn't a blazing headline of a terrorist attack in Chicago. This was ho-hum, kids being kids. Am I wrong?
You're absolutely right. One thing I would point out, though, if you look at that video again, I was looking at it this morning just to refresh my memory about this. That reporter had a look of terror on her face. Mm-hmm. Look at how upset she is. The report itself was, ho-hum, just another day in Chicago, nothing to see here, folks, move along. But if you look at her facial gestures and you read her body language, she was freaked out. There's no doubt about it. And right. That's what's going on here. As I put in my tweet, this wasn't some sort of gang versus gang shootout, you know, in a different neighborhood. This was an out and out terrorist attack. You could fire over 100 shots in the heart of River North, downtown Chicago. Come on. This is terrorism. This is not misguided children with nothing to do.
But we have a political situation here, Gene. And I'd like you to speak to this because officers are dealing with this all the time. They have to balance, like, I got to get through my shift. I got to get home to my wife alive. At the same time, they know that if they take the wrong turn, they push too hard to get a perpetrator, they're going to run into interference from the political machine, meaning Tony Preckwinkle and her Democrats, who are the George Soros representatives in Chicago. And that has, I think, wreaked havoc upon law and order and common decency in Chicago. And it's, I think, a main factor of why things are going to hell so quickly.
You're absolutely correct. You know, the rules of the game have flipped in Chicago. You know, Chicago has always had a reputation as a law and order city, but the dynamic has changed as the political dynamic in the country and here in Illinois and in Chicago has flipped. You know, it's no longer the policeman is the hero. No longer do we encourage aggressive preventative patrol. We're here basically now as figureheads. You know, we're decoys, you know, just to put up, try and scare people away. We're not engaging the troops. I'm sorry about the faux pas there. I keep going back to saying I'm still invested in the department, you know, 30 years. So excuse me about that. But it's almost like the cops are merely decoys. They're like putting up the sign at the store that shoplifters will be prosecuted. Yeah, right. Okay. I'm scared. I'm not going to shoplift. That's what it's come down to. And, you know, one thing, there's an old quote from football. You play scared, that's when you get hurt.
Yeah.
Well, the cops are playing scared and justifiably so. What happens, though, is, yeah, they get hurt. And so does Joe and Jane, homeowner in Chicago. So does the reputation of this city. This reputation, the city's reputation, we're a laughingstock. We've become a laughingstock. It's terrible.
With over three decades of serving up streetwise insight and local perspective on Page 2, the voice of John Cass has a home at johncassnews.com. A place where common sense is still served daily.
Listen up. Do you like being treated as a chumbalone, as a fool, sitting on a stool, smiling wanly, at the sky?
Don't be a chum alone and subscribe at johncassnews.com.
I'm John Cass, 40 years a newspaper man in Chicago. I won't name the place. It's just the paper now.
That's the Chicago way.
But I'm asking you to join me so you can get a decent cup of common sense, at least. You're not going to get it from the media. It's time that you join the frontier of independent journalism at johncassnews.com.
Don't get caught in the parade of chumalones.
Traditional media, mainstream media like the paper, they're all in on it. They think you're stupid. You know what they think? They think you're a chumalone.
Subscribe at johncassnews.com now for only $50 a year and become a member of the No Chumalone Zone.
I just wanted to repeat one thing, gentlemen. I've been covering politics for 50 years in Chicago. Two men named Daley were prominent in those years. If you told me that there were shootouts of 100 shots fired in River North, which is the epicenter of the revenue generating for the city of Chicago, I can imagine the police superintendent and everyone else being called down to the fifth floor and twiddling their thumbs, and they're thinking, what's he going to do when he hears it? What's he going to do when he sees us? And now we see another problem. We lost a good cop.
Yeah, but before we jump to that, John, I'd love to get Gene's take on this, because we're in the game a long time, and the game, like you said, the rules have changed, the engagement's changed. I mean, these weapons, these kids have weapons. I call them kids, but these thugs have weapons that can round off 100 rounds in a blip. And when you look at a local police department, no one's prepared for that. That's a federal thing that should be. We need federal help to take that down and tamp that down. And in your time, if this was happening, if there were military grade weapons on the street, because any weapon that can fire that fast is a military grade weapon.
Absolutely.
What would they have done 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years? I mean, I feel like we'd have troops on the ground overnight.
Absolutely. You can't tolerate this. But, as far as who should be locking these kids up, and they're not kids. They're thugs. They're gangsters. They're terrorists. Let's get that straight.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Sure.
It's not so much if you have to take guns away from somebody. You failed. You have to prevent them from getting the guns in the first place. Mm-hmm. And, that there needs to be some more, a better pre-screening program for people that are buying guns. But then again, these people aren't buying the guns legitimately. So when you do the in-depth screening of the legitimate purchasers, you're wasting your time. How many of these weapons have come in across our border, through the southern border, which up until recently was like a sieve, how many are coming in shipments in container ships from the Middle East and other places?
Well, that's my thing. Like our city, the government in hand now will just ignores the federal government because of the orange guy in charge or whatever. Was there ever a feeling that in your time running that, if we needed a bigger help, we needed more resources, we needed the arm of the federal government to help, was that ever there? Was that a thought? Well, no, we can't do that because they're not on our side.
Not at all. We viewed the feds as our partners, literally as our partners. Mm-hmm. I've gone on operations, I've been involved in investigations of narcotics and gangs and homicides. There were feds in the car right alongside us. There were feds knocking on the door, and there were feds with us going through doors with search warrants. That has changed. There's no trust. At a certain level, there's good working relationships.
Sure.
But everybody, the fear that's affecting the Chicago Police Department, the Cook County Sheriff's Office, and the suburban departments, it's made its way into the federal government, too, because let's face it, they're being, the feds go out on something and they're being doxxed now. Every fed is a bad guy who is out kidnapping, people who shouldn't be here. As if you read the anarchist literature and postings, we've got to rebuild those relationships. And, one of the problems is it goes back a while is we were reluctant to have a good, for a lot of reasons, our relationship with the prosecutors wasn't the best that it could have been. The national model, and I sent one of my homicide lieutenants to a week-long FBI symposium on this, is there needs to be a closer working relationship between the state's attorney's office, the U.S. attorney's office, and the troops on the ground. For example, let's talk about felony review. There's a reason for felony review. We need felony review.
Yeah.
Okay. In certain instances.
Gene, explain that for anybody who's, may not be in the know.
Felony review is a process whereby a Chicago police officer or any police officer in Cook County who wants to bring felony charges against an offender has to have the case reviewed and approved by a representative of the Cook County State's Attorney's Office.
Mm-hmm.
It was sometimes a laborious process, but sometimes, there's an old saying, steel sharpens steel. You get people in there and say, State's Attorney would say, you can do a little bit more, you can do a little bit better. Okay, yes, I can. We'll come back, give us 6 hours, 12 hours, we'll call you tomorrow, we'll get it done. Or you can say, no, what we've done as much as we can do. We can't take this any further because this is the case. This is as good as it's going to get.
Right.
Well, there was a time that the felony review used to be quartered with the Chicago police detectives in a police facility. And if you had a case, you could just walk down the aisle and talk to the state's attorneys who were there. It was their office and say, hey, I've got this. We're getting ready to do this. We think we've got the guy identified. What would you like? How do you think we should proceed on this? Should we go down road A or road B? And you could work out those problems beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And this is before Anita Alvarez's administration. And you wouldn't bring a bad case to felony review because they would have been in it. Even if it was informally, would have given you advice along the way. And here's how to make your case better. We lost that. The state's attorney, it was again before Anita made a decision. It made it look like there was too cozy of a relationship between the police and the state's attorney's office. So they all had to go back to an office and be on call, different people all the time. And that's when I saw as a detective and as a detective supervisor that we were starting to lose our way with these cases. And that's when it started.
And so I distracted you from the point about the felony review piece. So that, that's just not happening now. Or it's just they're afraid to do that.
It's getting better. As a matter of fact, Superintendent Snelling instituted a procedure in a number of districts where felony gun charges no longer had to be presented to felony review. That authority was delegated to the watch commander on duty in the district where the incident occurred. You could have people waiting 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 hours to talk to a felony review state's attorney. And it's a good thing because it speeds up the process, gets the officers back out on the street quicker. We're processing more gun arrests, which is important. That is an important thing. We're making more gun arrests. But at the same time, you're having an incident. You're having a climate where the officers are dealing with their watch commander. Their watch commander can say, hey, look, you need to do this a little bit differently. Mm. You didn't document this. You didn't document that. And it makes for better cops. It makes for better cases, and it makes for safer streets. We're prosecuting more people for gun cases.
So when does that start breaking down? Let me ask. I tried to bring this up earlier, and I jumped the gun, but now it's the time. We have police officers who are, if not rudderless in terms of command, they've lost their command chief. Larry Snelling is no longer the superintendent of the Chicago Police Department. And I've heard from my sources that Soup has been became tired of political interference from the Brandon Johnson, Tony Preckwinkle wing of the Democratic Party. He got sick of it. And then they asked him, well, if you announce this year that you're going to be retiring, can we at least do this in a joint news conference with the mayor? And superintendent said no, because his integrity means a lot to him. And I think you understand it, Gene.
I absolutely understand it. It's no surprise that Larry Snelling has decided to move along. The only surprise is that it's taken him this long. Hats off and a lot of respect to him. for putting up with the stuff that we see. You and I can guarantee you, behind the scenes, behind closed doors, it has to be 10 times worse.
Sure.
And give them a lot of credit. And you can also tell the level of disrespect that the mayor has for Snelling. And, you know, apparently Snelling made some command changes. We have a new first deputy superintendent. And, you know, the mayor chose to normally, in a case like this, the first deputy would be the interim superintendent, acting superintendent, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah,
right. And he, when the mayor said, no, we're going to keep Fred Waller on, he'll be the interim superintendent, you know, that was a parting shot at Larry Snelling. You know, Fred Waller's a great guy.
And sure.
Fred, right. I don't think
I wish Fred would take over on a permanent basis, but he's smarter than that.
Does Fred like being used by Johnson in this matter? Because it's being used by Johnson is what's bothersome. Like you're the deputy, you're the interim, so I can keep control over this house of cards that's fallen down, I think.
Well, actually, Fred or anybody else who would be in a position as an interim after Larry's departure and the way it was timed, the way it felt came together, the mayor can't take another hit when it comes to the police department. So the mayor's going to have to watch his P's and Q's with Fred and the interim administration. I think Snelling's sudden departure of his own timing and his own accord has sent a message out. And we all know why he left. You've said it quite well. But I think Fred has got a different set of cards. He's polite. He's respectful. He knows his business. He knows when somebody's trying to sell him a bill of goods. And he knows when he's got the real McCoy. Right now, the thing is to get him through get the police department through the rest of the summer, through the fall, through the election cycle. We're not going to have a permanent superintendent until sometime after the mayoral election, I don't think.
God bless Waller. And I don't know him personally, but from everyone who has ever told me anything about him, he sounds like he's just a quality operator, somebody who knows to get the bleep done. And that's what you need in that position. And Snelling, and this is my read and opinion on it, is everything you wanted in a leader, someone who came up in the system, who knows the city, who knows every corner of the department, and is there to do the job, not do the politics. And just because he disagrees with the administration, they pushed him out, and they forced him out because they wrote him out, really. It's apocryphal, and it's just par for this administration, which is, you know, just can't manage its way out of a paper bag. But Gene, what do you think? Where should we look for the next leadership? Because it's going to be a new mayor, I hope. What do we look for? Because I don't want politics in that position as much as it seems to have been over the last few years.
You know who you don't ask? You don't ask Tony Preckwinkle.
You know, first of all, I'm sure there's people on the outside that are salivating over the chance to even apply for the job here.
Yeah.
But then again, Chicago's a unique animal. L.A.'s a unique animal. You know, you have to know the turf. You have to know who the good guys are, who the backstabbers are. Each city has a different, unique flavor to it. And, you know, there's a lot of roving chiefs out there, you know, professional chiefs. I think one of the biggest problems, especially if we have a different tone to the next administration, is that you're already dealing with a demoralized police department. You know, and we're just that much short of being a rudderless police department. It's got to be somebody from the inside. We can't have a guy who comes from the far south and decides to go home every weekend. You know, those days are gone. You can't have that. You need somebody who knows the streets, knows the people, knows how to talk to people, knows when people are BSing.
And is respected by the men.
Exactly. So I would hope that whoever wins the next election and brings us the change that's so sorely needed across every avenue of city government and safety and life here in Chicago, it's got to be somebody from the inside. You don't bring in a new quarterback in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl.
Guys, I think I mentioned this last time we were on. I was at a wake of a good friend of mine just a few days ago, really. And his name was Tom Donovan. And he loved the city. He loved it like the people of the 11th Ward loved the city when they were the kings of the city. And to see them all in this, you know, in this funeral home with the lines going around, it took you hours to get to the casket. I thought of the city of Chicago mourning men like that, wanting to have leadership like that to protect the city from itself and from its worst impulses. And I don't know if we have it now. I mean, I see maybe politically, Susana Mendoza is coming up. She wants to be mayor. I see a total gas bag named Alexi Janulius, who I'm not a fan of, who wants to be mayor. And Mike Quigley for the hockey player, right? Like a winger doesn't want to be mix it up in the corner. Yeah, I know what that is, but I don't see them as having the influence within the governing people of the city of Chicago, the police, the fire, streets and sand. They don't have the juice in there. Maybe Susana Mendoza does because she loves the police department. Her brother's a cop or was a cop. I don't know. What do you think? Do you know her, Gene?
Yeah, I know her. As a matter of fact, full disclosure, her brother worked for me.
Okay.
All right.
He was a detective under you then.
Perlman and a detective, yes. Susana brings common sense. She brings street knowledge. She has the connections. Even though she was a state controller, you know, she has an office and had an office in Chicago, too. Still has an office in Chicago. She hasn't lost touch with her community. Mike Quigley, you know, I don't know him. He's North Sider, congressman. Why would you want to be stepped down from being a congressman to running for mayor in Chicago? It almost seems like a spoiler.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Alexi is Alexi, but what more can I say?
That's a lot of baggage there, buddy. A lot of baggage.
Broadway Bank.
Yeah, exactly. He's always tangentially attached to something nefarious, but never directly.
Two words. Broadway Bank and Jaws Giarango. If you ask any detective, what do you think? Should we have a mayor who's connected to Jaws Giarango? The detective would put his hand out and touch you in the chest and just exactly. Stop you there.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's what we've got.
That's where we are. Yeah. Were you a district commander at one point before you became chief of detectives?
District commander in the 9th district, Bridgeport.
Right.
The year that the Sox won the World Series.
Love those years.
It was great.
I love those years. All right. Well, there's an issue. Crime has ticked up, I'm told, in the 9th district. What's going on there? Not that you're in charge of it, but what's happening there?
You know, I haven't looked at the crime stats lately over there to give you an in-depth analysis on it, but it's a lot of things. We've gone from 12,000 police officers, approximately, down to 10,000.
Yeah.
We have 2,000 fewer officers in the city. So that means that each district is short a couple hundred officers, you know, or, you know, maybe 100, 200, depending on the district. Look at the 16th district up on the northwest side.
Uh-huh.
If it was a standalone city, and also the 8th district on the southwest side. If either the 8th or the 16th districts were standalone cities, they'd be in the top five largest cities in the state of Illinois. And they're running on midnights with 6-8 officers. You can't effectively police. You're not a presence. You don't deter. You know, back in the 60s, there was the old mantra of aggressive preventive patrol. You know, and
right.
The police are everywhere. They're seen. That's how they discourage crime. You know, you're doing traffic stops. People see that people are getting pulled over or getting traffic tickets and stuff like that. It cuts down on the bad driving, cuts down on the injuries, cuts down the accidents, so forth. we've lost. We don't have the manpower to sustain that, let alone the political will. It's important. It's little things like that.
One thing we never really get to the heart of, what happens to like a district when it's running shorthanded for a period of time, not just a day, like around a holiday. I'm talking about week after week after week, early shift, late shift, you know, midnights, 7 a.m. and again and again. What happens to the police and the quality of control in the city when stuff like when you have that situation?
Of a couple things. First of all, if you don't have that visible police presence, it doesn't weed the criminals and the people that are just out there being goofs. There's nothing to say to make them look and say, oh, the popo's out tonight. Better not do this. We'll go somewhere else. We'll go right to Niles. We'll go to Schaumburg, what have you. So you've lost that visible deterrent. Now you have to consider the effect on the cops.
Yeah.
Only six, maybe 10 cops working.
They're tired.
In a huge district, like 16 or 8.
Right.
And what's your first priority? Get home safe at the end of your shift. Protect the citizens, but also you have to protect yourself.
Right.
So you go into sort of a defensive mode. You get out of that proactive mode because you want to be available in case your partner or your fellow officers at the other end of the district come across a situation where they need help and they need help quickly. So you have the police actively withdrawing and just being, instead of being out there and actively looking for crime and looking for traffic violators, you have police have gone into a defensive responsive mode. They're not in a proactive mode. Yes. They're in a responsive mode.
They're in a shell. Yeah,
exactly. And you can't blame them.
No, you can't. You said it correctly. They got to come home at the end of the shift, and they have to. And when their shift work is done, when their work is done, they have to have a pension to live on. Their wives and all the sacrifices they made with their kids and their families, they have to have something to buy groceries with.
Exactly. Exactly. And there's a couple of problems. You know, first of all, there are roughly 10,000 active duty Chicago police officers that are contributing to the pension. On the other hand, there are 14,000 approximately annuitants, retirees, widows, widowers, and dependent children that are relying on the pensions. Pension is roughly about 22% funded.
It's a crime in itself. Yeah.
You know, it is. And nobody wants to address it. Everybody says, well, it's in the state constitution that the state has to make good on the pension. No, the constitution says your pension benefits cannot be diminished. That means they can't tell you when you sign up, you're getting a 75% pension after 30 years and say, nah, we're running short on money, so we're only going to give you 50% or 40%. That's what it means. And if anybody out there thinks that the current political structure in Illinois is going to step in to make good on the CPD or CFD pensions if and when they go under, they're living in a fool's paradise.
But the larger context of what you're talking about, Gene, is what does it mean for the people of the city of Chicago, the taxpayers, the businesses that invest or don't invest? What happens there?
First of all, I need to go back to what the impact of the pension problems have. You know, again, the manpower shortage, not being paid into the pension. Our best and our brightest, the young cops with that 5 to 10 years of experience. You know, it's like
he's in Naples, Florida now. They love him.
They love him. They'll pay moving. Some places will pay moving expenses.
Right.
You know, some place, if they don't want to move out of state, the suburbs, the collar suburbs and the collar counties can't wait to grab these highly trained and highly experienced Chicago police officers. And when they go, they pull their pension money out of the Chicago pension fund and transfer it into that municipality's pension fund. You know, right. So you have that. And, you know, you talk about the impact. Again, cops are wondering, you know, my pension going to be here? If I get shot today, what quality of medical care am I going to get? Are they going to pull the plug on me? Things like that. it affects the morale, and it drives the cops further into that shell. They're in its shell rather than being proactive.
I feel like we've brought everybody down about the future of policing in Chicago, Gene. And I'd like to, and John, and if you're all right with this, I'd love to get a good story out of you. You mentioned the Sox the other day or a little earlier. I know you've got some, you're running point around that time. And you got any good stories from that era?
Fantastic. Well, you know, I'm a very, very fortunate and very lucky individual. And I got to get a phone call one day in February 2005 from Phil Klein. Hey, be in my office tomorrow at 10 o'clock. and you're going to be promoted. Okay. And I end up going to, go through the promotion ceremony. And we talked to him and his chief of staff after the whole ceremony is over. And, you know, here's what you do. You need to call these certain people, introduce yourself. And, you know, and by the way, don't forget to call the White Sox. Yes, sir. And I'm like, huh? But yes, sir. So, but then I talked to somebody else who said, told me a story of somebody else who had been appointed as commander of the 9th District going back like 20, 30 years ago. And his instructions back then were, go over and introduce yourself to Mr. Reinstorf. Make sure you're on the same page. And this guy thought, Reinstorf didn't make me. I don't need to go talk to him.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he decided not to show up on opening day, which is, John, as you well know, is like
disabusing.
It's like going to, you have to go to the Vatican when a new pope is being installed. It's that serious.
Gene, what years were you down there? Were you in
2005 to 2009?
All right. Well, Gene, you're in a good place now. You've made it through all those years in the police department. I don't mean to be flip about this, Gene. I know your service was excellent for the city and the people, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. It's an honor to be able to sit here and chat with you. Thanks again for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Gene.
Thanks, Gene. For Gene Roy, former chief of detectives of the Chicago Police Department, if anyone knows about Chicago, it's Gene. And for Jeff Carlin, WGN Radio, future physics teacher, friend of cats, baker of pies, and me, I'm John Cass, executive editor of johncassnews.com, where you always get a good cup of strong common sense for less than a dollar a week. I don't know of any place that gives you common sense and doesn't charge you an arm and a leg, but I don't. Thanks for joining us on the Chicago Way podcast, and thanks to all of you who've written in asking about what we're doing and what's our update and what can we do for you. And we'll be back next week for another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN+.